Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. I'm your host, Spencer Stokes. And today, our folk that we're joined by is Devin Weiser, who is the former chief of staff to Congressman Rob Bishop and the current executive director of the Walker Institute of Politics on the campus of Weber State University. So welcome, Devin.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
We were just at lunch a minute ago, and we were talking about the fact that there were only two chiefs of staff in the history of Rob Bishop. And so that covered, what, 18 years?
Yeah.
And how long were you chief of staff?
Just under 5 years.
5 years. Yeah. So it means that Scott Parker was chief of staff for, 13 years. Yeah. And, you started in the office as an intern, didn't you?
Yeah. Yep. I interned first. I was at Utah State University and went there for a semester in fall of 2009.
Okay.
That was my first exposure.
And then did you leave or did you go on staff? I know you went to law school.
Yeah, so I went back. I think I had one more semester to finish up. So I went home, finished that up, and then came back the following year, and then started as staff assistant, and then just kind of
for those who don't know, the staff assistant job is it's the lowest point on the rung of a congressional office. So when you walk into everybody thinks it's so glamorous to be a United States congressman, but a United States congressman has three rooms that basically make up their office, pretty much. I mean, it's, you know, there may be a little ante room if somebody's moved up further up the, you had a, toward the end of Rob's career, there was a little conference room across the hall.
That
switched back and forth. If Democrats were in power, then you guys got booted, and if you were in power, then you took it back over. But
we had to pry it from Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She hung on to it for months.
After
after lost power. Yeah.
So, and how did that go? Who handles that? Is it the Sergeant Arms? Who handles kicking them out?
The Speaker's office actually controls all those special extra offices.
Okay.
So it's directly through their office. So eventually we just had to contact them directly and say, hey, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's staff is not moving out. Can you intervene? And that was John Boehner at the time in his office.
That's hilarious.
Finally. Yeah.
That's hilarious. So, but a staff assistant is starting at the bottom of the rung. You walk in usually to the center of the three rooms, and the first person you see is usually a staff assistant and an intern.
That's right.
Who's up there in the front. And so you literally did every job. You were an intern, staff assistant. Then did you move? What did you do after staff assistant?
Yeah, then legislative correspondent.
Which is the next rung up.
That's the next rung up.
And I think it would be the hardest job in the office, especially in a Rob Bishop office, because he wants to look at every single letter.
Yes.
And make sure that you don't end any sentence in a preposition.
That is true. That is something I learned quickly.
Yeah. And so it was probably difficult to do that.
He is very particular, but you know, I think it's pretty noble actually that he will look at all the letters coming in and going out. Most members of Congress, in fact, I don't know of any other member of Congress that does that like he did that.
So, and then, as I understand it, Rob used to actually take some of the best letters he received and called them.
Oh yeah, yep. He would kind of, some that were a little more specific that would, you know, just be easier, clearer, just to give them a call. He would do that almost every night during when he was in session out there in D.C.
And that's the beauty of being 2 hours, you know, behind, because he could call from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and it would be, you know, 5 to 7 p.m. in Utah.
Or even 9 to 11 he would often do, because it's 7 to 9 here.
Wow.
And that he often wrapped up his day around 9 p.m. So then he'd go home and make some calls.
And I can tell you this. I've seen countless letters to the editor that were written over that 18 years by citizens that were shocked when they had written a letter to Congressman Bishop and then had gotten a phone call from him, which is the icing on the cake to the letter he's going to send back. Mm-hmm. So intern, left, staff assistant, legislative correspondent, then what?
Legislative assistant.
Then legislative assistant, which is the really the highest, you know, the highest spot on the food chain other than chief of staff or deputy chief of staff.
Besides legislative director.
Oh, yeah. Legislative director does fall in. Did you do legislative director as well?
Yep, I did that.
So you did literally do every job in the office.
Except for communications director.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one I did not do.
So. And who did you have? Had Melissa already left?
No. When I had become chief of staff, she'd already left.
Yeah, okay.
When I was working my way up there, she was communications director pretty much the whole time.
Who were the other communications directors in the office? Was it just Melissa and Lee?
Yeah, Lee Lonsberry. So when I came back as chief, he had just been hired on like a few months prior.
Was Melissa there in the very beginning?
No, do you know? So I know Cody Stewart actually kind of brought her over when he was executive director of the Western Caucus. She started there, and then she just kind of gradually worked her way into personal office stuff as well. So she covered both, and then eventually she just did personal office. But yeah, she was there for many years.
So what was what were the lessons learned as you'd worked your way all the way up through the food chain, the ladder. What lessons were learned along the way as you were doing this?
Yeah, what sticks out to me, honestly, is that no job is too small.
Okay.
Know? Like, no matter what your level is, like, if it needs to be done, you just do it. Especially, you know, if the congressman asks or something, or the chief of staff asks, you just get right on it. You don't worry about, you know, what level you are, who should be doing the job. You just get it done.
I think the most important job in a congressional office are two: the person who answers the phone and the person who greets you when you walk in the door. Mm-hmm. So when Utahns go to Washington, D.C., or when they call Washington, D.C., they really think, you know, that this person works for them. Their staff works for them. Mm-hmm. So in a congressional office, it's a little bit different because, you know, it's such a small office. Everybody can hear everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. So you really have an opportunity to kind of train interns and say, hey, don't say that, or but no job's too small. And a lot of people think that the smallest job is the person who answers the phone, the person who greets people when they walk in. I argue the exact opposite of that. Mm-hmm. I think it's the most important job.
Yeah,
what other kinds of things were you engaged in? When a lot of people don't know this, but the chief of staff, every congressional office and every Senate office can designate two people that can deal with politics, and you did a great job helping Rob navigate political stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Because and you know, I view that based on how well does their campaign run every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Are they good at fundraising? And those things seem to work pretty flawlessly while you were there. Congressman Bishop never ever changed his sign in 18 years. It was always black and blue, which I think is what he thought he felt like serving in Congress that long, being black and blue. Mm-hmm. I think it was the flag of, was it like Lithuania? Estonia.
Estonia.
Yeah.
Sure.
They have the black and blue flag.
Mm-hmm. And he said he just liked it when he was a kid, and ever since then, he always liked that color combo.
It's shocking that Estonia actually kept the same flag in that many years.
Yeah, that's a good point.
From when he was a kid.
That's true.
So what was the angriest you ever saw Congressman Bishop while you were back there? Come on, give us some dirt on Congressman Bishop. I know he listens to this show, so he's going to hear this as well.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, so it makes me change
this
my
is yeah, this is not one of those things where he's not going to hear it.
Okay.
He's a faithful listener to the 22 episodes I think we've done.
Okay.
24, 18, 8. Come on. Our executive producer, Connor Sorensen, is telling us only 18 episodes, but I think he's listened to most of them anyhow.
Okay. So he's, you know, he's pretty even keeled, but he does get angry occasionally, and you can tell because, you know, he gets a red face and he starts to kind of shake in his chair, and you can see a little vein in his forehead. He, even though he denies all of that, he says he never gets mad, but he, and mainly, so he didn't really love to fundraise. So that was something I feel like I had to sort of drag him into doing a lot of the time. So often if there were events that he didn't really want to do, he would get a little bothered.
But that's not unique. No member of Congress likes to fundraise.
Right, but I feel like he was especially that way.
I'd say that. I would say that. But it is, everybody thinks, well, they go back there and they get involved with all the special interests and they go out and, mm-hmm. and ask the special interests for money.
Yeah.
Trust me, they don't want to have to ask special interests for money.
Right.
It's something they hate doing. So mm-hmm. fundraising. What about Patagonia? Did he love Patagonia?
Oh, absolutely. It's his favorite company. Definitely stuff like that would make him upset when they, you know, from his perspective and from many people's perspective, they would just outright lie about the situation when it came to bears' ears. Although one time at a Christmas party, it was a sort of a joint Christmas party between the Natural Resources Committee staff, which you chaired,
right,
and the personal office staff, and he actually put on a little show where underneath whatever he was wearing on as a shirt, he actually had a Patagonia vest underneath, and he was up there giving his little speech, and he started like slowly taking off his shirt, and it was like, whoa, what's going on? Or maybe it was a jacket, I don't know, but something that was hiding it, and so everyone got a kick out of him actually wearing a Patagonia vest.
I can't believe
he didn't combust. Right?
Yeah, just into flames. Mm-hmm.
I know. We all thought he would just burn it right there, but he resisted.
So Congressman Bishop had two chiefs of staff. As far as I know, he only lived in two different places.
That's correct.
They were both over on the Senate side.
Yes.
I call East Capitol the division between the House and the Senate because it runs straight into the middle of the Capitol.
Right. If you were to keep going, you'd cut it in half.
Both were on the Senate side, mm-hmm. just barely, the first one.
Yep.
I remember going to a committee hearing once, and the committees have pretty strict rules about time, minutes mm-hmm. that you can speak.
Yep.
And so he was the timekeeper, the guardian of the clock,
okay.
and was, you could tell he didn't want to do it, but would have to cut off members when they were making a presentation or speaking.
Yeah, I think it would depend on the member. Sometimes he sort of relished it, right? Cutting off. There are a couple that I can think of that were just very
that he enjoyed.
Yeah,
that he enjoyed cutting off. Probably usually, on both sides of the aisle too.
Oh yeah, definitely. There were some on both sides that irritated him.
But I remember going into the Natural Resources Committee, and sitting behind, which is a beautiful committee room.
It is.
And behind the dais where the chair sits, there was this series of flags, mm-hmm. and I'm like, what are all the flags? I mean, I was expecting to see, a congressional flag, mm-hmm. The House and the United States flag, but there were all these other flags mm-hmm. Behind the dais, behind the chair. And I remember asking him after, hey, what's the deal with all the flags? Did you just feel like you needed more flags behind you, or what's going on with all the flags? And his explanation was, and you're going to tell what the explanation is.
Yeah, so they are all the flags of all the territories that the United States have. So it has, D.C., Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, American Samoa, Guam, and Northern Marianas. So those six flags are behind, and everyone has that same question.
Nobody knows. And why in the Natural Resources Committee room?
Because the Natural Resources Committee actually has jurisdiction over all issues that pertain to the territories. So he's had a lot of fun with that over the years, especially, you may recall Puerto Rico having some debt issues that he had to deal with. And that was complex.
it was what I like to call the collision of Robs. If I remember right, and I think I may have just never uttered it, but thought myself, the biggest supporter of trying to fix everything Puerto Rico was Lin-Manuel Miranda, the author and creator of Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Rob Bishop is putting his foot down on some of the tough issues with Puerto Rico. And I thought, all it's going to take to fix this, because Rob loves musical theater, is for Lin-Manuel Miranda to show up and start rapping and singing songs from Hamilton, and it'll be all over. Rob will give them whatever. Fortunately, they never figured that out, and so it never happened. But I thought, this has got to be rough on Rob, the biggest advocate for Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did always feel a little bit cheated that he never got to see Hamilton.
That's right.
So, you know,
but he did he see it when they came to Utah? Has he seen it yet?
I don't believe so. He may or may not have had access to like a pirated copy of it.
He may or may not have. Yeah, yeah.
I can't confirm.
Yeah.
but I don't know if he's seen it actually on stage.
On stage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so when you went, but you did law school. Where did you go to law school?
Yeah, I did law school at George Mason University.
Okay, and you did it as a night program, right?
Yep. Or, yep. So I stayed, working full time in Congress during the day, and then it started every night at 6 p.m. and went till 10 p.m.
Every night?
Yeah, the first year is 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, and then the second and third year, and I did a fourth year. It's Monday through Thursday, so you get one night off at least.
Oh, they drop it back. They're so kind.
Yeah, so
they drop it back one night.
Yep. That's why I always get a kick out of all these people getting their masters or whatever back there, and it's like one or two nights a week. I'm like, that's nothing.
Yeah. Now, you are currently the director of the Olean Walker Institute up at Weber State.
Yes.
We're going to hold off on all questions Olean Walker Institute because I do think we want to invite Leah Murray to come down with you.
I love that.
Leah is what's her title at the Olean Walker Institute?
She is the academic director. And she's incredible. Yeah, she has so much energy, and all the students just adore her.
She's beloved. Mm-hmm. She's beloved with the students. Yeah. Two of my children, all three of my children graduated from Weber State, but two of them had a bunch of political science classes and had classes from Leah, and they loved the classes that she taught. She's very energetic and enjoys the topic, and you can tell that in a professor. Mm-hmm. So
she and I bring different perspectives, but I think that just strengthens the Institute, actually.
No question. Yeah. No question. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we've talked about Rob's, veins break. What were some of the other challenges you faced as chief of staff? Or he was a senior member of Congress. What was his number when he left? Do you remember?
I want to say like 87.
Okay, so like out of 435, he's 87, which is that's getting up there in the and was the full chairman.
Ranking member. We've had two.
Two full chairmen of natural resources in the course of 42 years.
That's right.
So 18 with, is that the right math? 18 with Rob and 24 with Jim.
I believe.
And so that's why I tell my friends that are in the legislature when they start talking about public lands, look, we've had the full chairman or ranking member of natural resources twice and couldn't get some of these public lands issues fixed. So, can it be done? I have no idea.
Yeah.
What other types of challenges do you think, there will be some person listening to this podcast who will go on to be a chief of staff and will relish what you said about, hey, these are some of the challenges you face as a chief of staff. So,
I would tell you the thing that I was least ready for probably was like the HR side of things. I'd had policy experience and legislative procedure experience and all that, but the HR stuff nobody trained you on.
So how many
they just sort of throw you
how in. Many staff members does a congressman have?
It kind of varies. So we had typically maybe like 12 plus interns
in the personal office.
Yeah. In the personal office. And then, like 20 or 30, depending on the committee side of things, which was separate, but it's about that between DC and our Utah offices.
And the chairman hires the, staff director. So he'd hired the staff director. And who were his staff directors while he was chairman?
And initially it was Jason Knox.
Okay.
He was kind of a DC guy. I don't think he had very many Utah ties. And then he hired Cody Stewart, actually, who did that for a couple of years, who people may know that are listening. And then his final one was Parrish Braden.
Okay. And he was where did he come from?
Kind of a DC guy too. He'd worked on the committee for a long time. He worked for a member from Pennsylvania, GT Thompson, for a number of years. And now I think he's actually still back there as, staff director for a different committee. I can't remember which one though.
What kind of involvement did you have with hiring the staff director? Did you get consulted on that at all as chief of staff?
Yeah, Rob and I, pretty much any decision that he made, we, you know, there was at least some consultation or interaction. So yeah, we did talk about that, especially not so much the initial one, but
because
yeah,
you may have inherited the initial one, right?
Did you? So Rob hired him actually.
Okay.
But that was, yeah, before I was, you know, super involved. And I was also going to the committee at that time. I went to the committee as a deputy chief counsel for a couple of years.
Okay.
Right after I graduated from law school.
So you were over on, I didn't know that. So, yeah. So you had the experience from a committee standpoint as well, which probably helped.
Yeah, no, it absolutely did help having that perspective in the personal office once I became chief.
And, you know, the chair of the of a committee is, I can't remember how many committees there are in the House.
I think 16 or 18.
Yeah, so, yeah, so out of the 435, there's 16 to 18 committee chairs. And so, you know, being a committee chair is powerful. Rob was also on the rules committee.
Yes.
Were you there when he was on rules?
Office. Yep. When he was on rules.
And, and that is also a powerful, it's different than the Senate rules committee, because the Senate rules committee really talks about where your office is going to be, how many flags you can have outside your office. In the House, it's what amendments will be allowed on the floor of the on a piece of legislation has to go through rules.
Yep. Anything that goes to the floor has to first touch rules and to allow it or not. So
it's a hand-picked selection by the speaker because they don't want anybody bucking what they tell them.
And it's not too much anyway.
Not too much, but all of those votes are pretty much party line votes, if I remember right.
Yeah, it's very rare for them to break.
Yeah, right,
break from their party. Sure.
And if you break from your party, you probably aren't going to
lose your spot. Yeah,
aren't going to stay on rules. How many years was he on rules? I guess we could ask him all these questions.
Yeah, we'll have to bring him on. Yeah. I mean, a good number, like I would say 8 to 10.
Yeah, a long time.
A long time on rules. Yeah.
So, okay, final shot on this. What book are you reading right now since you're at a university? And have you read the Boehner book?
I have not read the Boehner book, but it is on my list.
Can I give you a recommendation?
Please.
Listen to the audio tape. Of it, the audio tape. Jeez, it sounds like I was born in the 60s or something. Listen to the audio book because Boehner actually reads it, and it is hilarious to hear him tell the stories and swear, of course, because he does swear.
Yeah, I bet he adds some color.
Yeah, he does add color. So what book?
I'm actually reading 1776 by David McCullough now.
Oh, really?
Which I've read before, but it's sort of a classic now, even though it's pretty new. It's really well written. Talks about the
so
of our nation
a double reading
into that. Yeah.
A double reading of 1776, probably a good idea.
Yeah.
People could read
refresh
that.
Refresh your memory a little bit.
Right. Well, hey Devin, thank you for joining us. And we've also had a studio audience today with us, and our studio audience member's name is
Sierra Reese, my niece.
That rhymes as well, Sierra. And of course, a big thank you to our executive producer, Connor Sorensen. This has been another episode of Stokes and Folks. Like us wherever you get your podcasts, download us, and you'll hear us again next week.